follow you. I'm not a scientist, but let me explain my concern here, is that there's no way to have any confidence that someone who's active, telling the truth, someone who's lost, who failed, is not telling the truth. And there's no no proven correlation between this. For example, you could pass everyone, suppose you have a very low base rate of guilt, as you do with everything else. I think Jake Piper estimated, what was at the bureau, that there were maybe 3 spies to 10,000 employees. Well, you could get a very high accuracy rate, if you will, just by passing everyone and saying, well, regardless of what college that says, you're passing people, well, you'll be right most of the time, almost always. But such a test has no diagnostic value. And that's my point, is that polygraphy, controlled question test polygraphy, has not been shown to have any diagnostic value.
And my concern is, and then I'll stop and pass on, it's simply this, that by the argument that I hear from DPRI, then somebody else who failed the background check without polygraphy, all right, could start an organization and the NIS convene a committee, and we could be sitting here the same way reviewing what background screening does, all right, and the same arguments would apply to background screening, and hence we could then initiate the entire government security screening program on the same basis that you're claiming polygraphy. Because I know of no, at least, unless this other committee found data that I don't know about, I know of no comparable data validating the standardization of and the error rates of background.
So there is a difference. So background screening is not represented as a scientific test, whereas polygraphy is. And in the minds of people who are making decisions on counterintelligence policy, they seem to treat it as if it were a scientific test, not something more ambiguous like a background investigation.
This is going to cause a good thing with your issue.
No, because I've got such a long list. Yeah. You'll get on the list.
Okay.
I've got everybody on.
Okay, yeah. I have a little different question. You said that, basically, from this DOD testimony, that the 202 people who failed all admitted that, you know, that you got them on something.
That's what DOD said.
Right, okay. Now, I'm assuming that when you failed your test, you did not make that admission.
No.
No. And I'm assuming probably...
However, my polygrapher may have thought so. Because, yes, when I said no, I didn't disclose classified information to unauthorized persons. My polygraph examiner asked me what I was thinking about at the time I answered that question. And I told him, and it wasn't disclosing classified information to unauthorized persons or consorting with foreign intelligence services or using illicit drugs. But he asked me to write down what I was thinking. I did that. Then he asked me at the end to sign the statement, which I did. And my understanding is that this is often, such statements are often solicited to serve as confessions from people who are subjected to polygraph screenings. And so I don't know in my polygraphist report what spin he may have placed on what I happened to be thinking about when I answered the question.
So what you're saying is perhaps these all made substantive admissions
you might not think they were so substantive.
So here's another question. I presume, because if you have your website, people get in touch with you and say, yeah, this bad thing happened to me too. So
we receive
a
lot of anecdotal
sampling frame, but at least,
yeah,
you know, you have information. How many people do a lot of people get in touch with you?
We're not keeping a count of people or texts, but in general, I would say several times a week we're hearing from people who say they were falsely accused of deception based on a polygraph test.
public file, just as we were talking about before, and the public will have access as well.
It sounds to me from a lot of what you said, from the reading I've been doing and the breaks of his testimony your age ago, that the central issue has to do with when there is a false positive. And I think one of your points was no matter what you do, what procedure is used, it will always be false positive, is what happens? How is it adjudicated? How well are appeal processes in place to ensure that the person turns out to be a false positive can disagree, can challenge, cuts off people in building, et cetera, because presumably, nobody wants false positives to suffer. What you're telling us is that those kinds of procedures are not in place, but at least
I would say it depends on the agency.
You're telling
my basic is the Federal Bureau of Investigation. As an applicant, if your chart was scored a deception indicator or inconclusive, you don't get hired. That's it. Now, if your focus is to be on the Department of Energy, I think that they give a lot more consideration to the employee.
This brings back to the point that I was making earlier today, that we need to find out, whichever agency we're doing, the information that apparently the people who administer the programs don't get. As they told us, that any kind of false positive, even one that they think is trivial, goes to the adjudication group. And they don't get feedback about it. But we must get feedback and data about that if we're going to evaluate this particular technique, like any technique, so that we can use it. There will always be false positives, even if we can't know how many. We can know what are the procedures in place to then deal with them, and deal with them in a way that everyone would consider fair. I agree with
that. I suggest that one way that it's being dealt with at places like the Department of Energy is where they know there's very few spots. So they change the way they score the test or lower the sensitivity, if you will, to pass just about everyone. In Edward Curran, who's the former director of Department of Energy Counterintelligence, said to Vernon Loeb of the Washington Post last year that of the 800 persons who had been polygraphed up to that point, everyone passed. There were no positives at all. Population of 800. You might consider how that happened. It seems strange to me compared to when you look at research and what sorts of false positive rates are occurring. It seems that agencies like the Department of Energy are somehow managing a false positive rate. And that's a policy issues
that we're going to find out about that. But if you're right, there are going to be false positives.
No positives at all.
Then there isn't a problem. There's a problem with only the false negatives.
There clearly are different numbers. I mean, this is a factual matter. We've all read the report to Congress from DOD, that is a public document, and we have read the published or printed and released studies by Sheila Lee. Those rates are different. It's a factual matter. One of the questions we do not know the answer to, I think it's fair to say, at least at this point, is why. Although I suspect that each person in the room has his list or her list of reasons. And I think that we will try to address that. I don't know that we're going to resolve it. If there are none, there is an interesting issue, and I think, again, this is going to be a discussion item for the committee, about how you set thresholds, given the fact that you can't maximize both kinds of error. And so, is there a way to think about that? Well, again, this is an issue that I think we're going to turn to this afternoon as a broader one about how you think about such trade-offs, and the question is where the empirical information fits with our deliberation.
All the question of false negatives, that was a nice segue into the very same time. You mentioned a number of times about people contacting you with a statement to the effect that they were falsely accused. Do you also get people contacting you saying that they passed the polygraph and not necessarily a major espionage, but you know, I took the book home I shouldn't have, or said something to my neighbor that I shouldn't have, and I passed?
I haven't received messages like that yet. I suspect it's just people who might do that aren't likely to brag about it. And
right, but such admissions would be quite relevant to this book. If most of the positives come about because of security infractions that, while they're not desirable by most people's definition, would be relatively minor on the scale of things that they're looking for. How many people have committed such infractions and are passing their polygraphs would be quite a relevant issue for the panel. And I've asked this question a number of occasions, and I'm just wondering whether there is any data on that.
I think there's a study done at Josh High Org. In 1989, there was a study done by Barger, Hunt, and Garland on polygraphs.
We have that in the agenda for public this week.
Okay, great. I don't know that it's, I don't recall whether it's in that report itself or in a paper later written by Charles Hunt that his conclusion was that what the counterintelligence folks testing is really checking for, or really trying to get, is admissions of security violations. And that as a tool for getting such admissions, that if I'm not mistaken, I believe he calculated accuracy to be about 2%, that is only about 2% of security violations were being reported. It's based on an estimated 20% base rate of skill. But I can track that article down.
We
and
have that article with our agenda book.
Yeah, and one more brief issue that on some of the remarks that you have made about the issues, the effect on the impact on somebody's life, this point was already made, apply as well to the, although it's not intended to be scientific. I have encountered people who claim to have had similar experiences to yours, but it was with the background investigation and not with the polygraph. So, for example, I know someone who claims to have been denied to be re-cleared on the basis of financial irregularities, if you would say so, that in this person's research, a number of people have passed with the same kinds of issues on the background investigation. But this person had brought an EEO suit against the organization for which she was working and claimed that was real legal. Now, I don't have any independent verification of that, but I've heard other similar anecdotal stories with respect to background investigation. And so the issues that are raised with the polygraph also come up with the background investigation.
Right. Well, I don't have the answers to what weight should be given to information obtained in the course of a background investigation. But in
our review of the research, we have found that there's no evidence that polygraphy has any diagnostic value. That is, if it doesn't tell you that whether someone's lying or telling the truth, as opposed to, well, again, I don't, certainly abuses can occur, mistakes can occur in background investigations, but it's a policy decision to put some trust into the background investigator. I think that the science behind calligraphy, or that is not behind calligraphy, doesn't justify making any, using polygraph chart readings the basis of any decision on someone's truthfulness or lack thereof.
Jeff, you have a comment on that? Although I'm not going to comment at this point on the accuracy of polygraph, George has said what he believes it to be, but in distinguishing between that and the background investigation, can also be looked at as a screening tool, similar to witness testimony in a court or criminal investigation and so forth. But the big difference is that it can be corroborated. If there's an allegation from the background, it can be done, and it can be corroborated by a second or a third person. There's no diagnostic follow-up as a confirmatory technique for polygraph screening. I think there are some differences.
It's difficult to follow up.
I haven't lost you, David.
You're talking about the same subject.
Oh, okay.
I'm happy to.
If it was of any aid to you all, there are background investigations where the subject is accused of something by neighbors, friends, prior spouses, etc. And they're in a real trip. Clearance is suspended, etc. The normal resolution of that is to administer a polygraph. There are numerous examples of how that polygraph examination ended up clearing the subject who was wrongfully accused, and then when you go back to the alligator, if you will, whether it is a strange spouse, neighbor, old buddy, that person gets that, not just with the item, this was only back then. So there are some answers to
that. The question I guess I would have is there any systematic collection of information about that we can look at to take stock of the relationship between the
Veterans Security Service polygraph program might have such.
It would be very, very valuable because we get anecdote after anecdote, and the question is
how do we find it interesting? Because you know, my security clearance has been revoked, and I got my title from the Defense Security Service, and also from the Central Clearance Facility. They considered giving me a polygraph test too to clear up some things they saw in my background, and wanted to ask about. However, when they sent a request, they sent a note to the polygraph unit of the 902nd Military Intelligence Group at Fort Meade, asking whether I would be a suitable candidate for a polygraph. This was last year. And there was a memo sent back saying, we're not going to polygraph this guy, he's too much of a hot potato. He's on the internet telling people how to eat the polygraph test. If federal polygraphers don't think the polygraph will work on me, I'm a hot potato. But what's going to happen with other people who know, or even say you assume that I don't know what I'm talking about, but those who think they know how the polygraph works? I can't emphasize enough, you need to get an answer for how polygraphers are going to handle those who understand the trickery that the procedure work on. And that's another reason why the test has no diagnostic, because that's not diagnosticity. You don't know unless the subject says that he knows how it works, he knows how the test works, whether that variable enters into the equation of the outcome. You have here today David Renselman. Maybe he could tell you how does the Department of Energy handle scientists who tell their calligrapher, look, don't lie to me. I know how the procedure works. Don't try to fake it. You won't impress me with your little acquaintance test telling me that I responded to the number that I chose without showing me the charts and whether or not I did. You're not going to fool me into thinking that the purpose of the directed lie control question is that I can show that I have the capability of physiologically responding if I were to tell a lie deliberately, when in fact the rationale for it is that you just want me to be nervous about whether I'm responding appropriately to that question, and you assume that if I'm a spy, I'll react more strongly to the relevant question, and if I'm telling the truth, I'll respond more strongly to the control question. And, when those irrelevant questions that you tell, like, is your name George, or are the lights on in this room, when you ask me those, you're not using those to see what it's going to look like when I tell you the truth. You're not going to use those to score at all. They're just buffers between spots, between pairs of relevant and control questions. With someone like that, and anyone who reads our book knows these things about the procedure, well, how are you going to test them? What does the Department of Energy do with people who would admit to their calligrapher that they know how the procedure works? I've been advised confidentially by a graduate of the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute that a likely result would be that the person who admits that they understand the procedure would be polygraphed anyway and arbitrarily accused of deception and or countermeasures. I would hope that that's not the case in the Department of Energy or in any federal agency. However, it seems that such has happened with the Central Intelligence Agency in the past, and you'll find a reference to that, I believe, in Chapter 4 of the Lie Behind the Lie Detector, with regards to a CIA applicant who had worked on a congressional committee reviewing secrecy in government.
David? One observation on Peter's point that we've been about others and one question. I think on one of your concerns seems to be a fairness concern, a perception of fairness in government proceedings, the attendee in a truthful fashion as well.
Yeah, I think there's
a distinction between the background examination and the polygraph is the ability of the examinee to answer the accusation. And so just from the due process fairness perspective, if my neighbor says, you know, they've been hanging out at the Russian Orthodox Church, I can respond to that, and I can, it's sort of normal to say, well, there's bias or something going on, where the polygraph, or the examinee's perspective, might be a black box, that there's random error going on, there's bias from the examiner, or something else that they can't respond to. So just from a fairness perspective, I think that the screening test seems to be, the background screening seems to be fairer because it's something I have an opportunity to respond to, even if sometimes it's just confused.
Well, that's my perception. In my own experience, I've spoken with background investigators, addressed their concerns, and I found that the background investigator reported favorably on everything that had been a security concern. My personal experience, again, they revoked my security clearance, despite the background investigator's favorable impression and conclusions of my truthfulness. And it seems that the polygraph results have a heavy influence in that, although there's no specific mention of it in the statement of reasons for revoking my clearance. So, well, I don't want to tell you my stop story, but just as from my experience, yes, with the background investigation, the subject of the investigation has more of an opportunity to address, refute, or explain any information that's provided. Whereas with the polygraph, it's hard to live down a false positive outcome.
But there's black box. You don't know why your heart rate jumps, or you have theories, but or it might be your interaction with the examiner.
In my experience, I was dumped
found when I was accused of essentially of being a spy by the FBI. I was in a state of shock. I lost peripheral vision. I think got a ringing in my ears, and I finally understood the meaning of the word dumbfounded.
Now the question I have is, you said when you were talking that you had no objection to criminal polygraph. That's one of the, is that a policy of the organization? Is that because the base rate is presumed to be higher?
No.
Litigation is happening anyway, so it's not sure every tool we have.
I would say that to the extent that the polygraph were used in a criminal interrogation as an aid to interrogation to trick a suspect into confessing, I can more easily rationalize the dishonesty involved in that.
Of course, the Constitution.
I think the Supreme Court has ruled that the police can use deception in interrogation. But there are concerns about abuse, and that point I raised, I think might be of some legal weight. I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but if the subject who agrees to a polygraph test is lied to about the nature of the procedure, that's really a fundamental deception. And every polygraph format requires that the subject be lied to and deceived about the nature of it. So I think that does raise civil liberties issues. But our main concern now, antipolygraph.org, and we're a network of individuals, we're not incorporated. We don't make policy statements as an organization. I'm affiliated with others in this effort, but I speak here for myself.
Actually, I didn't have a question for you. I just wanted to set up a case, but I think you asked for something.
We'll need to talk about this and be quite carefully articulate what we want, but I think what we're interested in is in enough information of what happens post-examination through the adjudication process, and if there are rates at which things get reversed, including where background checks come in parallel. So essentially, what we would like, I believe, is a full set of information on clearances and examinations that parallel that which we've been getting with polygraph, and perhaps interact with it. And how you parse that and how you structure it and ask for it, I don't quite know yet.
If you were to give a full set of that,
it
would be fine. And we wouldn't have all people what happens. Not just those cases that are the background measures project. And that's not, you need a full data that you want to submit it. That's one of them. Let's say you're coming for a fire for the project in the water. So unless we have all of the information, we just can't evaluate it.
We need to know what kind of energy cases go to adjudication and then what happens with those cases.
However,
different kinds of outcomes on the basis of what procedures.
Ideally, what we need is something like a transaction record.
Yeah.
And
we know that doesn't exist in quite that form, and so we're asking for as much of that as we can get.
To explore, you mentioned a few times the nature of the lying during the polygraph. I wanted to explore that a little bit because you just said, made the statement that every polygraph procedure that's being used involves intentional deception on the part of the polygraph. And we have known that there's variation in the kinds of polygraph tests that are carried out, but we've heard that at least some don't, or at least that's claimed. And I'm wondering what you mean by deception and why you claim that this is universal.
It's universal because
the control question, the test calligraphy, the nature of the control question cannot be disclosed to the subject. It's in every format, the subject is deceived about that. Now, you mentioned there's a format that doesn't involve the subject. Could you tell me what that format is?
Well, there actually are. One of the theories underlying all of that is that the same statement saying that the control questions are not relevant questions are needed still gets the larger response. It's an empirical question. I don't know what the study was asking there. And I don't think it's at least one of the theories underlying the paragraph that there's several. One of the theories is it wouldn't matter. But I don't know if it's ever been empirically done. But I wouldn't say that it's an empirical fact because it's not an empirical fact.
But the polygraph formats that are being used in screening are directed like control question tests or probable like control question tests. They all involve deception on the part of the calligrapher. So, are you thinking of maybe the NSA format? Because they also use a disguise control question.
Clear, we're not going to resolve.
I'd be, by the way, happy to correspond by anyone by phone or by email.
I would like to bring this session to a close, but simply note that, and especially as you, George, we are gathering every study and every document that has empirical information. I think we've made an effort to identify from your website things that are absent in our file, but if you happen to note ones that in particular are absent and you think we should look at, please bring it to our attention. Our goal is really to assess it and to make our own judgments about many of these. That's what we're up to. There is lunch for the committee and its invited guest speakers in the next room. There is a restaurant in the hotel that others can go to, and a cafeteria at the Academy across the street. Do I say across the street? Okay, Whitehaven. So if you cross Whitehaven, which is
downhill
at the light, and then walk in that complex, you can go into the basement and go to the cafeteria, and the food is good.
The building on the right-hand side of the basement.
The green building.
The green building.
And we'll convene you in a moment.
Called green building, not a green building. Yes.
The one thing that you're saying is and Chan Maver, who work with Chris, and we'll be also working with this committee to help, as we said, through some of the papers, the documentation and papers and track down studies that we don't have copies of, but that we've seen referenced in other ones. And extracting information on exactly what methodology that's been used, and indeed in some cases going back and trying to get more information, because what you find in published reports is often not sufficient to label what's been done and what hasn't. We thought that we would turn today to deliberations more or less discussions more or less led by or initiated by members of the committee that are moving into our principal mandate. So in fact, if people look at the agenda, this is sort of a matrix of what we've been asked to do as a committee. Review in particular screening studies. And we're going to also try to ask what everything else has to do with screening studies, because that is part of what we have in mind. And then we'll look at what other things we think are relevant to the deliberations by looking at two or three topics. Our goal here is to both educate ourselves, so those who are joining us, your witnesses to our discussion. It's very hard to restrain members of this committee, as some of you have already observed, and so we'll just sort of let it go. But the second thing I thought I would make a note of was the fact that this is an opportunity for those in the room to comment or give us additional input if there's something about the things we're looking at that we've missed. So it may well be in evaluating screening studies that there's a key issue that we haven't discussed this afternoon. And we would very much appreciate, either in a formal way or in informal discussions afterwards, any input you have, because there aren't a lot of such studies, and as people will know, the documentation that's in them is often not as complete as one would want to have to know the answers to certain key questions. That's not a critique of these studies, but a comment about studies in general. It's what isn't ready that is often as important as what is. So with that, as a prelude, I thought we would begin with the polygraphs screening studies we have extracted from the literature, and we've asked John Cassiopo to begin the discussion, but then I'm simply going to be traffic cop and make sure I keep track of who wants to say what, and we'll let it go for a while and then see where we're at. I went to 1:30. Let me take an initial. No, given that I was at both places, the committee has gone and done two site visits, not as a committee as a whole, but in subsets. And we will be sharing in various ways information that we've gleaned with one another, but we thought it appropriate to make clear for the record what we did and what we tried to learn. And again, invite people to comment if we didn't learn something that you think we should have done. And the two site visits to the Dogpai Institute in Columbia, South Carolina, where a small number of the committee visited with two staff members Pat, myself, Paul, Stern, and Susan. I think that was it, right? And then a somewhat larger group visited the DOE test center in Albuquerque last Monday, a week ago Monday, and Tuesday, and a few people were there for both days, and different chunks of people on Monday and Tuesday. And that involved something like 3/4 of the community, I'm guessing, maybe somewhat more. So let me begin with the Albuquerque report, and we'll let people chime in. With the Dogpile report. We met with the senior staff at Dogpile, including the director. We spent time reviewing the curriculum for the course. We talked with the title of the dean, Dean Johnson. We actually looked at some of the curriculum materials. We observed at the back of one of the classrooms briefly. And we discussed the role of the curriculum and a number of other Dogpile programs. We had a tour of the facilities. We discussed with Andy Ryan and some of his staff the research activities, and we inspected the rooms used for both training polygraph examiners, and in the afternoon of that first day, we witnessed one of the training programs where a group of trainees from the base were brought in lieu of KP duty. They had polygraph duty, and they were subjects for examinations, and some of them, and the group went through one of these extensive espionage training activities. And we observed the full polygraphs that followed and had some discussion of it. And then on the second day, we also visited a couple of other research activities linked to the research program, including an ongoing study involving voice stress analysis machines. And we visited with people at the University of South Carolina. We met on the first day with people from the quality control program, and learned how they said they did quality control. And then those of us who then went to Albuquerque 2 weeks later literally went through the process as it was implemented in the Albuquerque Center and reviewed files and the formal quality control review that had occurred there. So there was some continuity between the visits, and Gary Cooper. Not Gary.
Yeah, I have a Gary.
Yeah. Gary Light.
Gary Light.
Who we met with in Columbia was there for part of the presentation in Albuquerque to members of the community as well. I think those are the highlights from that. We, as a consequence, made requests for a number of documents and studies so that we could learn more and sort of go more in depth. But we did talk in particular about the screening studies that we'll talk about here.
Do I
reflect
that to the some alternatives to polygraph. We observed the place analysis experiment that was ongoing that you're also made aware of. Laser software system, evaluated at 5 and made aware of the thing that you've heard said, the continued development and implementation of a database being built for research purposes of actual cases from various federal agencies that you cooperate with that kind of research group. And I think we also would be aware of a level of resources available for research at that
point.
Probably not, but I can.
We have somebody who will help.
Okay. There's actually two abstracts here.